no.
Okay. Welcome back to the From the Fabricator podcast. I'm your host, Max Perlstein. Thank you so much for joining me once again this month on the podcast. A fun one once again. Interesting one. Learned a lot this month. And so we'll talk about the guest coming up in a moment. But as always, this podcast is brought to you by MyGlassClass.com from the National Glass Association. MyGlassClass.com. Tons of courses, 24/7, 365, even a bunch in Spanish. This was built by the industry for the industry, the NGA. They know what they're doing with training. So this is glass and glazing training through myglassclass.com. Check it out. There's sections now in there for apprentice training, sections in there also for my glass fab, which is new for the fabricator. So that is myglassclass.com from the NGA. All right. One quick note also on the NGA, Glass and Glazing Advocacy Days are coming up. And if you are interested in going to Washington, D.C. and representing the industry, go to glass.org to learn more, or you can hit me up and I'll point you to the right link. All right. On today's show, real excited. Two sets of guests. First up, we go on the paint and finishing side. This is an area that I'm not very well educated in. I learned a lot. Probably asked some dumb questions, I will admit that, but the guys were really good to me. Neil Chrisman and Chris Incorvea were my guests, and I probably mispronounced his name. I feel bad about that. I'm terrible with names. Anyway, Neil and Chris were fantastic. Enjoyed getting to learn a little bit about what's going on in that world. And Neil's past is really, really something. More than 50 years in our industry, and he is still on fire and moving forward and doing some great things. And then after that, talking about doing great things, Tom Donovan from Thompson Innovative Glass in Michigan. They are on fire. They are really moving and grooving with innovative glass products. They have evolved as a company. They're in a lot of different spaces, bird, security, school, so on. And then some new stuff like heated glass. He gets into all of that. And we talk a lot of Cleveland Brown, too. Cleveland Brown's history. You know, I'm a sports buff, so that was a lot of fun. So stay tuned. I've got Neil and Chris starting off, Tom on the backside, and then I'll see you on the other side with my TV recommendation and wrap-up. Thank you very much. Here we go. Okay. Kicking it off on this next edition of the From the Fabricator podcast, I'm joined by a pair of gentlemen, and I'm excited to learn because, as I was telling them before we started, this is one of those rare opportunities for me to really learn about something I don't know a lot about. I don't know a lot about what they do and the nitty gritty, the work that they're doing in the industry, the way that they're helping out the industry. So this is a chance for me to learn, for the listeners to learn. So really thrilled to have Neil Chrisman with me. He's started you may know him from Spectrum PPG. He's been around, he told me 50 years. We're going to learn a little bit more about that. He started a new advisory group called Pictura. And he's also joined with Chris Incorvea of Edge Facade. You can find his stuff online at edgearc.com/facade. Neil, Chris, thanks so much for doing the podcast.
Thanks for having us, Max.
Awesome. Thanks, Max. We appreciate the opportunity.
Awesome to have you guys here. And so I'm going to start with you, Neil. Again, I think what's interesting, you mentioned to me 50 years, coming up on 50 years, you're nonstop energizer bunny of this industry. You said you're semi-retired. You do more work than most people that are working like 70 hours a week, my friend. Talk to me, though, about the past. How did 50 plus years ago, did you get into this business? And, talk about your long and winding road on the paint and glass and glazing side of our world.
Well, it's an incredible journey. Graduate of industrial marketing out of Penn State in 1974. The job directly out of college, I had an opportunity to jump into a sales and marketing role with PPG Industries. At the time, it was Pittsburgh Plate Glass. I was trained as a bench chemist and moved me into the coatings and resins division of PPG back in 1974. And through various sales and marketing positions all over the country, I ended up going back to corporate for mergers and acquisitions, and then an opportunity to run what they call a global business manager for the architectural extrusion division of building products within CNR, coatings and resins of PPG. So for 18 years, from 1974 to basically 1993, I was a global business manager for PPG's extrusion coatings divisions architecturally, I spent many years in Southeast Asia building paint lines and selling the PPG products such as Durinar globally in Asia Pacific, and then turned around and they sent me to Europe, did the same thing in Europe, and then came back and resigned after 18 years to buy Spectrum in 1993. So I went from selling paint to applying paint.
Gotcha.
So for the last 30 years, I've been running Spectrum, building it as a brand for specialize in both applications of architectural coatings in liquid and in powder. We do not anodize. We have a huge facility, 70,000 square feet, located in Youngstown, Ohio.
Right.
I just sort of semi-retired and sold my business to my son.
Gotcha.
Mule 4, I think it was in December of 2021. So I understand he's doing a great job, but so I'm sort of out the pasture, so to speak. But the situation is apparent that I've got my Rolodex is, you know, pages and pages long. So I'm still getting calls from architects, developers, curtain wall contractors, you name it. They said, Neil, I trust what you've been doing for 50 years. I need your help. I just decided, hey, I might as well benefit on this and try to be in some sort of a consulting advisory form. And I've been working undercover with several other people and projects until up till now, and decided to put together this Pictoria, P-I-C-T-U-R-A advisory group. And just so you know, Pictoria is Latin for to paint.
So gotcha.
It all falls into the same finishing architectural coatings group. So that's where we are.
I like it. And now, Chris, how do you follow that act? covering Asia, starting paint lines, basically inventing paint is where Neil does, and then he did it. So I feel for you, Chris. Talk to me about your past, and I'll help build it up a little bit along the way. I'm sure it's pretty impressive. Talk to me.
I wish I had the highlights and accolades of Neil's career, but
me too.
But I'm not quite at the 50 year mark there, so I got some time to maybe catch up a little bit.
You bet.
Great. I've got a bit of an interesting introduction to this this field. So I started my professional career 18 years ago, right out of college, in this industry.
Okay, what college? Where'd you go? I'm curious. I'm always
Ohio
curious.
Wesleyan University.
Okay. Gotcha. Yep, I went to Ohio U in Athens. So I know Ohio Wesleyan. We lost in basketball 1 year to Ohio Wesleyan, actually. It was really rough.
It shouldn't happen because you were a D1 school.
Exactly. My senior year. Sorry, I'm way off. I'm a big Ohio basketball guy. But go ahead. Back 18 years. Go ahead. Sorry.
Great. So I came out of school with a general business degree. And my first assignment, the first company I got hired with, was quite a fun one. I got sent overseas to Ireland and UK.
Okay.
When I was there, I did not get to use my college degree. I was in the field as a laborer, which was wonderful. Yeah. And I got to learn how to restore the architectural factory finishes on high-end aluminum clad windows and doors.
Interesting.
I got to go out in the field. We got to travel all of Ireland and most of UK. We were up and down the coast at high-end homes, restoring the architectural finishes that were put on them. And so that was a really unique and neat experience for me. I think I spent about 8 months overseas doing that. Came back, and then for many years after I came back to the States, stayed with the same company. I worked in operations and project management, focused on the restoration and maintenance of curtain walls and facades. So existing structures, either, you know, repurposing them, restoring them, extending the service life on those structures. Eventually, after doing that for over a decade, I gained enough knowledge to move into business development and the consulting side of the business, which is incredible to be able to create, create opportunities and create unique solutions for these existing buildings that are there.
Okay.
Today, I own Edge Facade, which is a firm that we developed specifically to service the industry for these architectural finishes, both in restoration, but also in the new construction side.
Gotcha. Interesting. So congrats on that. That's a nice little run, and it had to be interesting to start your career overseas on the ground too. That's a heck of an accomplishment. Congrats to you.
Yeah, appreciate it. I would have had it no other way. Learning it from the ground up and understanding how these coatings perform and also how they can be restored successfully was a great jumpstart to my career.
Yeah. And then I'm sure it still helps you to this day too. So very, very interesting. So back to you, Neil, you've started Pictura. You're involved in everything. People still calling you. So what's hot and happening in your world now? That I know that when you and I initially talked about doing a podcast together, there was a lot of different things swirling around. So it's you guys aren't slow, you or Chris, right now. There's a lot of different things going on. So what do you got going on, Neil, day to day?
Well, basically, right now I got a twofold thing going on right now. One is, the first is to educate the architects and building owners and project managers on all issues related to the architectural coatings market. And second is to address the potential problems and pitfalls the architects and the specifiers writing the specifications are not suitable for that project in the environment where it's going to be exposed. So they run all this, you know, the project managers, the developers run a series of questions through me. And I'm looking at filiform corrosion and its cause. Example, seacoast applications. Is it good? Is it not good? What coatings do you recommend for seacoast applications? I'm looking at the geography and the possible corrosion issues at the site, comparing aluminum and steel, the proper pretreatment techniques, the primer versus no primer, clear coats, no clear coats on the coating systems required, 1, 2, 3 coats if required, and anodized versus powder versus liquid.
Wow.
So this is coming into help me build a coatings specification for that particular job at that particular site.
Gotcha. So architects and specifiers are leaning on your knowledge on that whole wide range of insight and info. Got
right.
it.
Yeah. Just recently I had a recent opportunity as a technical advisor with SOM, Skidmore, Owings & Merle.
Sure.
Up in New York. And I am currently developing a master spec to try to address all these coatings questions, or a white paper of sort, to be able to navigate each individual building owner or project. And the critical issue that SOM gave me to look at, and I'm going to read this to you, but it's called, the critical issue is how do we align architects, paint manufacturers, painting applicators, fabricators, contractors and owners about the specification. What is critical here is their expectation, because they've had so many critical issues. Basically, the owner has a paper chip from the architect.
Right.
And when it absolutely is applied and installed in the building, it's two different colors.
Right.
So there's an expectation that we have to build, and how do you follow that process through line samples, and how do we get approvals before all of this gets done and on the building and they don't like it?
Yeah, definitely. And we're going to definitely talk a little bit more about those issues, but alignment and managing expectations are two things that I take away from that. That's a heck of a challenge. And we'll definitely dig more into that. But Chris, how about you day to day with Edge Facade? You mentioned kind of why you started it, and you know, you own this company and you managing partner and you've got something going on, but what's the day to day look like for you?
Yeah. I mean, our main mission is finding and developing building envelope solutions. And it's twofold for us. I mean, one is restoring existing buildings, which primarily is in the commercial world, office buildings, mid to high rise, you know, structures in major metropolitan. So there's that end of it, which is really important to the industry, right? There's not a whole lot of building skins being ripped off and replaced. So the idea is keep the tenants happy and comfortable with being able to restore the exterior of those buildings and maintain operations. The other side of it in the new construction world is us being able to service these architectural coatings in the field. A lot of these finishes get damaged during installation. They get damaged by other trades. And sometimes, which you know isn't ideal, you just have a factory failure. You have a factory failure in coating due to pre-treat, due to coating application, due to something in the QA/QC process that didn't go accordingly. And so we're there in this industry to support this repair side of it, support the performance side of it. So we're able to go out in the field, make these repairs in situ, and be able to continue, or at least have the owner continue with their warranty as expected.
Gotcha. The renovation thing, it's been something I've been banging on for a while. Is I think that that's a business that's going to continue to grow for so many reasons. But you're right. Nobody wants to rip things out if they don't have to. And especially if the structure's solid, the bones are solid, you know. And so I assume that's what you're running into is aesthetically things aren't looking the greatest, you know, but if the bones are solid, you're able to help people kind of get over that hump.
Yeah, exactly. And so we're taking it a step further, and now we're starting to delve into not only the aesthetics part of the coating application and beautifying a building and preserving the architectural aluminum, but we're getting involved in the waterproofing, the sealants and the gaskets and the things that keep water out of the structure. And then in addition to that, we're also looking at performance of the building. So we're looking at glazing retrofits, being able to assist in that end of it. So if you're going to access a building from the exterior and hang a swing stage and address the waterproofing and sealants, we're looking and making sure people are at least considering what sort of, you know, value can I do to increase the performance of the structure through the glazing side as well.
Yeah. And in some cases, like in New York, they have to improve it because of the New York local law 97. So you're probably sitting in the right place at the right time. Where are you located, Chris? I know Neil mentioned Youngstown, Ohio. Where are you located?
Yeah. So I'm out of Tampa, Florida. That's where I'm home based, but we cover the nation.
Okay.
We deploy most of our team out of the Texas market. Cool. We've got a nice national footprint.
Nice. So Neil, let's talk about the issues and adventures out there, because you've seen your fair share. Are things better now than they were like maybe 15, 20 years ago, or are they getting worse? And especially with the people that you deal with. And the reason I ask that is that it seems like we have like this lack of like tribal knowledge from the people that you deal with on a day-to-day basis, and they may not know it, but that might be my opinion. What are you seeing out there, and what are the big issues that you're dealing with and helping solve right now?
Well, I think like exactly what you said. I think the expectation of, I'm not saying the millennials at 35, 36.
Sure.
There are very few people that have the kind of knowledge that you and I have had all over these years. And it's very, 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 I should say, not disappointing, but surprising to me that I'm getting calls from 35-year-old project managers and architects that are cutting and pasting the old AMA specs that they seem to be relevant and haven't really dug into it exactly. And they're really using old technology and old specifications for the environment that doesn't exist anymore. So I'm trying to walk them through, you just can't go in there, to the old AMA specs and think that you're creating a specification that's going to be around for 20 years. So it's a situation I'm trying to do a lot of education to the younger project managers. And the biggest thing is showing them photographs, detailing samples, showing them why you use a clear coat, why is powder versus better than liquid. The restoration market with Chris, he's part of my team. One thing he and I are working on right now is that not only do you have to get the factory planned and baked on finish available and approved, but if you're smart and you're doing this up front, you need to get the touch-up system that is currently, that's if they got an approved color, you got to get the air dry system for the restoration repair market approved up front, because at the end, they forget about it and nothing matches. So I also am looking at trying to use the knowledge that I have with regard to the substrates. Do we do ACM, composite, coil composite? Do we use eighth inch plate, extrusions? Do we use anodized versus paint versus powder? So all these questions come up from the standpoint of what is the best possible coating system for that end used application within that environment, sea coast or whatever.
Because that could, you just said it, because that, depending on where it's at, if it's in New York or it's in Tampa, it's a totally different angle. But the younger architect, the younger specifier, you know, they may be grabbing an old spec, copy paste, and not realize that the application is wrong because of the orientation of the area it's going in.
Yeah. And just in another example, I got a conversation with an architect in Chicago. I said, so you need like a Seacoast specification for Chicago. I said, why would you want to do that? And I said, you don't understand that when the city of Chicago plows all that snow and ice up against your building, all that salt sitting there from the first couple floors. So the guy totally realizes he has same salt corrosion issues if you're sitting in Florida as the snowplow that just piled all the rock salt up against your building. He never thinks twice about it.
You made a light bulb just go off in my head with that one.
And I'm thinking, you know, you don't think about this.
No.
You're thinking about Salt Lake City. Oh, my God. Yeah. Do I need Seacoast? Yes, you do. You know, so, you know, then there's a constant conversation about, okay, if it's Seacoast application, how far? Is it a mile? Is it 2 miles? Is it five miles? We have documentation that the Seacoast application issues and all that particular the winds and the rains carry it all the way into Atlanta.
Wow.
So a lot of people don't realize I'm okay if I'm a mile in. I'm okay if I'm 5 miles in.
Yeah.
Not necessarily. And you got to make sure that if it's a Seacoast application, the proper pretreatments, primer, no primer, what is my best application for all of that? And none of that is out there anymore because it's all with the 50-year-old guys, you know, and it's hard to get them assimilated because if it's not Zoom or if it's not readily in front of them on the internet, they don't get it.
I'm going to jump around a little bit, but on that note, how do we get this message out? I mean, I know you've started your firm and Chris is doing what he's doing, but it seems to me like a pretty big problem in trying to get in front of people to explain all of these things. What are your thoughts there, Neil?
Well, I think I can lean on my days at PPG and even Spectrum that we have a considerable amount of impact when we do these box lunch presentations. When we can get all the architects or project managers in one conference room, because everybody has a separate project. So going to each individual project manager is an incredible amount of time to do that and help through. So we at Spectrum, we at PPG, I'm sure Chris as well, we offer these box lunch presentations. So we have, we bring all project managers into the conference room. We supply them lunch. They don't waste any of their company's time from 12 to 1. We have a 45, 50-minute presentation, Q&A. They have lunch.
Yeah.
They go back. We have an immediate dialogue. They have a reference that they can refer back to. So they've seen all the samples. They've seen what happens with and without a clear coat, so to speak, the difference between anodized versus paint. So I think right now, collectively, these box lunch presentations are a way to get to that younger, the team members all in one time.
Right. Just so many. That's the thing. Okay. And there's so many. And so Chris, I'd like to have you answer also, you know, how we get the word out as well. But what are the kind of the big, Neil just ran down a pretty big issue there. The salt something. My answer would have been, well, Lake Michigan, maybe there's some salt left over in Lake Michigan. I don't know. But, what are your issues that you're running into and how do we educate? How do we build?
Yeah, I think I'll start with education. And
please,
what I found, I've done exactly for many, many years, what Neil just said is that box lunch, get in that lunchroom, that conference room and sit with those folks. What I think, and this is such an old story and I'm done talking about it, but I think we have to bring it up anyways, is COVID changed the way that people are interacting.
Oh, yeah.
And we are doing a lot of these webinars. And so it's not necessarily the lunch and learn anymore. It's the learn. And for example, I have four this week set up. I've got four Zoom meetings with folks sitting in a conference room or not, and they're sitting at their offices at home or they're spread out. So having the ability to people to accept you on a webinar versus an in-person meeting, because they're all now moved, they're all sitting in different places. It's been great to have the acceptance level of that. So the more we can do that, actually, the more we can educate the architectural community. And that's been really great.
Definitely helps reach the masses, and no doubt, COVID did change everything. So that there's it changed conventional wisdom, it changed the way we plan, it changed the way we communicate and educate. So, and so what's the big one for you out there? Or one of the big ones for you?
Yeah, you mean like what's the issue?
Issues and solutions. Sorry.
Yes. Yeah, it's great, and I think Neil will get into this quite a bit more here as we talk today. We get into the nitty gritty, but on my side, not all the coating manufacturers out there are supporting and providing the field applied touch up that Neil referenced. And so we get into a project and we have XYZ, coating from the manufacturer, and the installer, the GC, or someone calls them up and they say, we don't have anything for you. We don't have a touch up. And that's a big problem. So in my career, what I've found is that we dug deep and we found the solution. So you may not have the touch-up material from ABC company, it may be from XYZ company, but the important part is it meets the standards and specifications that were written by the architect and demanded by the owner. And then most importantly, the color is a spot-on match. And so we've created resources where everything's a custom color match, by the way. So you get a factory coating and you have a color code and you have a color chip. That's not reinventable just through the numbers. So you have to say, here's that color swatch, get it matched dead on. And we do that in a successful way that we can get out in the field and make small spot repairs and not have to worry about, you know, it not being approved from that side. And then the importance of that and the reason it's a requirement to have this custom color matches, you know, on liquid, you could be sprayed horizontally. You could be sprayed vertically. They're going to look different. You could have powder. And this is the part I think that Neil really liked to go into, because I think it's really driving the industry, is how do we get these things to match when they're applied differently?
Yeah. And Neil, let's talk about that, because again, like I said at the beginning of this podcast, I'm going to learn a little bit. I would have never in a million years, and this maybe shows my stupidity, thought that applying it horizontally or vertically would give it a different color, a different end color. That stuns me, actually. And I know there's color shifts and so on. But Neil, let's talk about, you know, what Chris was kind of leading you into, both the adventures in the field, in touch-ups, and then just the, you know, application issues and so on. How what are we looking at and how do we solve this?
Well, I guess the situation is, you know, and again, leaning on my Spectrum experience, is that as a custom coder, we get multiple components on the same job. We have plate for curtain wall, we have extrusions, we have railings, we have you name it. I always try to advise the client to have one applicator, one vertical and one horizontal. Okay. Now, when we deal with the extruder, an extruder they can't do more than 24 feet. We can do up to 35 feet. So they send us 10,000 pounds at 30 feet. Now, we need, from a color consistency standpoint, is they need to send us a vertical color standard of the approved color so we can tweak the paint on the horizontal line to match what the vertical application is looking like, just as an example. Okay. So I always try to advise my clients that if there's more than one applicator on the job, you need to send me an actual production piece that was approved, to try to eliminate any additional color matching issues between applicators.
Right.
So that's the way we try to continue. Then we set up a trial run and give them samples off our line to make sure it looks good from a vertical application, say it's an extruder like Keymark or Bonnell. They sign off on the standard, then we're obligated to meet that specification moving forward.
That's good. That's good. That's good advice. And that's the, how many people though do that when all is said and done?
Nobody does that. I can't tell you how many times that I've tried to say the paper chip will never match. What you need is a 12 by 12 or some standard off the applicator's line to approve the color. So, you know, I can't tell you for 50 years, that is the biggest statement I like to leave with my clients, is you have to have a physical line standard of the app, because the paint's different, batch to batch is different, powder versus liquid's different, vertical versus horizontal is different. If you have a coil composite panel, the spray, architectural spray, is not going to match that either. So you have to make sure that you coordinate with the architect, with the developer, who's on the job, who's butt up against other people's material.
Yeah.
Make a concerted effort to get that match correctly.
It's big. That's big. That's big. All right. This is good. This is good. I got a few more coming for you guys. I've got Neil Chrisman, who is an absolute, the king of all paint in my mind. Pictura Advisory Group is the new group that he's got going, but you know him from his years owning Spectrum and everything else. A very, very important player in our industry, especially at the AMA level, or I guess it's now FGIA, correct? It's a different name. And then Chris Uncorvaya of Edge Facade. A nice boots on the ground and a guy who's got a lot going on. Thank you guys for being here. We're mixing it up now. I got to go to a fun one. We just went through the heavy kind of adventures of our world, the lack of alignment, the collaboration, managing expectations. you know, everything in Neil's just the physical line standards and so on. So we go to a fun one to loosen things up for the audience. I'm in the winter doldrums. We just had snow here last week, so I'm very, very tired of winter. So I'm thinking about positive things. I wish I was in Tampa with you, Chris. I'll start with you, Chris. Favorite vacation spot for you and why?
I hate to say this, but we live in a little slice of paradise here in Tampa. We're actually near the Clearwater area. So it is as simple as us to take the kids to the beach on the weekend, set up camp and just enjoy the sunshine. So we don't go very far and we enjoy it here. So
nice. Now, though, in the winter, like it is now, is the traffic like insane because of all of us Northerners coming? Like, I assume we're recording this during spring break. I assume traffic there must be bonkers right now.
Yeah, I mean, first you get the snowbirds, right, starting in really January and February, and then you get 2 full months of spring break. You get March and April because across the country, they vary by weeks. And add to that that we're in the heart of a lot of the spring training
yes, you are.
For MLB. Yep. So that really puts it on you. So we locals know how to avoid the highway systems at what time and where to go and not to go.
Very smart. Very smart. Now, I'm very curious Neil's answer because, Neil, I did not know you spend as much time in Asia and Europe as you did. Because when I got to know you, you know, you were in Youngstown. I had no idea what your past was. So I'll be very curious where your favorite vacation spot is. But then again, I wonder if you even took a vacation in the last 50 years.
Well, to be honest with you, I was very fortunate to travel the world at a company's expense, that being me. So all the time and effort I put into Southeast Asia, I would have to say if I had to pick any vacation destination in Southeast Asia, it would be Singapore or Hong Kong. Absolutely fantastic places to visit, to enjoy. Singapore itself is 1 degree north of the equator. It's 85 degrees, sunny and hot every day. The culture, the climate, the golf, it was just impeccable. My favorite place right now, sort of semi-retired, is I'm a little bit further south than Chris. He's in Tampa. I rent a condo at Siesta Key, which is one of the most beautiful beach places in the country. So I have old friends in Siesta Key and then down the Naples. So I kind of drift back and forth, doing a little, you know, golf, boating, fishing, a couple cocktails here or there. It's all good right now.
Love it. Love it. You deserve it. You deserve it. All right. A couple more questions before I move to my last two questions, though. I just want to make sure that is there anything else that I haven't covered with regards to, I'll start with you, Chris, with issues in the industry, solutions that you're looking to push out there?
Yes. I think being going like really micro here and talking about these fuel applied repairs, one of the largest innovations that we've seen and brought to market here is the use of water-based coatings. And the reason for that, and these are water-based coatings that meet the AMA 2605 or FGIA 2605 specifications and standards. And the reason for that is when we're doing our application and our fixes, we're either in a space that is filled with trades and people around, or they're occupied. And what that means is we've eliminated the VOCs. We've eliminated the smells and the odors associated with these high performance coatings. So having access to this new technology has really been a game changer in new construction. And you can imagine the same thing is true in restoration. Occupied structures, exterior buildings with access for air and these odors to come into the structure, either through ventilation or even right through the windows, especially when you're dealing with waterproofing. So it's been a game changer, and we're really excited about the future of where these coatings are going to take us.
Nice, nice. Neil, any other adventures or issues?
I do. I think Chris being part of this advisory group, we have been called more than once into what we're considering some sort of a consulting litigation firm, where we are called in because the building owners have massive failures. They don't understand why it's failing. How did it occur? Who's at fault? Who do they go back on? So Chris and I have worked together in on various projects to identify, figure out, you know, the root cause of the failure. And then he comes in and recommends how you fix it.
Nice.
So we have this litigation, restoration, repair, field market kind of piece of the consulting business, which I think a lot of people don't understand, because I think they really need to get educated not only on the factory applied baked on coatings, but what is their choice and what is the best warranty, what is the best performance of these exterior restoration coatings to fix the problem that they have right now.
Good. I like it. So it's almost from soup to nuts. You know, you're covering all the different bases, which is, I think, really, really important. Good. I like it. So Neil, we didn't see you at BEC this year. Did we? Did you come? It was so bonkers. Were you there or no?
I was not there. Spectrum was there, full force.
Yep.
But I believe it was in February.
Beginning of March, first week of March. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I was still laying on the beach in Siesta Key.
Smart man.
But to be honest with you, I think it's a great opportunity. I think Chris does, and my whole team at Spectrum, it's the best conference of all this NGA. Now, we go to AMA, we go to Extruders Council.
Sure.
Power Coating Institute. I mean, there's so many associations that we belong to and are active in, but we feel that the tremendous amount of work and people that in excess of 800 people at BEC are all our end users, the curtain wall consultants, the architects, the developers, the fabricators are all there, all in one room.
Yeah.
So I think it's at best, probably the best conference within the industry all year. I think something like we just talked about here would be a great topic for next year.
I think you're dead on. I was hoping to be able to kind of squeeze this in this year, but definitely for next, it would be great. Chrissy, yeah, you were there. Was that your first one, or you had been to previous ones?
It wasn't, but for years, Neil advised me that we needed to be there. And I'm gotcha. Like, I don't understand it. Why would I go there? And about 5 years ago, we made our first appearance, blown away. Neil's right. All of the end users and end customers are there. There's no other event like it. We do AIA and Metalcon and other things. This one is just very unique with how niche it is with the folks that you have together. They're all aligned and they can all learn something from each other and network in a very high end way. I thought this year in Nashville it was electrifying again. It was really great. I said this before, but I think there's another day that could be added to that and be very valuable.
Yeah, I think everything that could go right went right, and it was just a perfect perfect combination of things. It was pretty exciting, and I have a feeling that next year you guys will be heard from, because this is a good subject and an interesting subject, and I think there's a lot that we could do with it. So wrapping up, I know you're both are extremely busy, and so I just very respectful of your time. I appreciate you doing the podcast. I always ask my guests about the market out there. And what's interesting about asking you two is that you're on a different side of the market. When I have a glazer, they're looking at their backlog, and same with a fabricator or a manufacturer. You both are in a consulting sort of form. And so you may be seeing things differently in the markets, than others may see. So it's good information for the audience. So Chris, starting with you, how's the market this year in 2024? What are you feeling? What's it looking like going forward?
Yeah, I'm very optimistic about where the economy is going, in particular in regards to construction and on the restoration side for me. And the reason I say that is we may see a slowdown in commercial new construction, right? Or there may be a glimpse into that window of that happening, or some people may say we're already seeing that. But the reality is that multifamily, in particular high-end condominiums, have not slowed down. That is going to continue. People are aging, number one. Number two, people are continuing to move geographically in the United States at substantial clips. And so that's going to continue to be a major part that drives us through any sort of slip or slowdown on the commercial side.
Interesting. And when I look at multifamily, I look south of you, and I look at from West Palm South, the multifamily building down there is just insane.
Yeah, it's wild.
It is. Neil, what are you seeing out there? And I mean, it's funny, when I was talking about how COVID's changed everything, in the past, you had been through the recessions in the 70s, you've been through the recessions in the 80s, the interest rates at 25% and things like that. You've seen it, you've lived through it, but COVID kind of changed that all. And so we don't know what to expect. What are you seeing out there? How are you feeling? What's your gut telling you about the marketplace?
Well, real quick, just as a personal example, when I first moved back to Pittsburgh with PPG back in 81, my interest rate on my house was 16%.
Oh, so
you can't, right now, 3.2, even at 6% is a joke. Come on, I paid 16% in 1981 to buy a house. Come on,
Oh my gosh. Every time I hear that, it does blow my mind. I mean, but then again, you were paying back in 81, you were paying 65 cents for gas too per gallon. So there is that.
my first house was $40,000, which is about the size of a garage right now, you know? But to be honest with you, I'm a little fearful. I agree with what Chris is saying. I think the market is full steam ahead. But my concern is, as you had indicated, with COVID, so many people are working from home, and the new construction, which significant amount of people in this business are tied to, that I don't see too many Hudson Yards or 30-story office buildings being built.
Yeah.
So on that horizon, I think it's going to be a slowdown. I don't think it's going to be a complete halt. There's going to be projects out there, but the size and the magnitude of some of the casinos, hotels, the Hudson Yards type projects are going to be probably a long way off. And I'm hoping that's not the case, but I really true that not only that, but there's so much lease space now is available. So when the leases come up, they're not renewing them. So that lease space is now going to be available at a cheap discount for anybody that wants office space.
Right.
Or they pull the trigger on a new building. So they're always, our biggest market right now is university work. I can't tell you how much university work we have. And schools and hospitals, basically, right now.
Yeah.
That's the strong part of our business right now. The 30-story office towers and casinos are sort of in the, in the basement right now, so to speak. So.
Yeah, it's definitely a challenge. Definitely a challenge. But good insight from both of you guys on that. And resilience is our key. As I wrote you guys, I think this is a very resilient industry, and you both have seen it for for you, Chris, more than 18 years, and Neil, you've seen it for a long, long time. And we fight through these adventures out there, for sure. And what's interesting about our talk today, as I'm wrapping up, is that you brought up issues that are happening on a daily basis that I hope that people can lean on people like you, Neil, and you, Chris, with Edge Facades and then the Pictura Advisory Group to, jump on so we don't have these issues in the field, because especially when work gets tighter, you can't have mistakes. You can't have color mismatches on jobs. I mean, you can't have them even when life is good, but when life is not so good or struggling, you can't have these sort of mistakes. That's where I'm coming from. All right. So wrapping up, anything else to add, Neil? And then I'll go to you, Chris. Any final thoughts, Neil?
No, not at all. I really appreciate the opportunity to get out there, get the message out there. I will be eventually putting this group together with regard to a website and contact information. You have my contact information right now. And if there's anybody that wants to get a hold of me directly, can certainly give me a call on the cell phone or send me an email.
All right. Yeah. And anybody who does, please, I will get you connected with Neil. And Chris, any final thoughts?
No, I just wanted to thank you, Max, for having us here today, and Neil for looping me in this one. I know this was really Neil's baby with you, Max, to get together and do this. And I'm just happy to participate and be able to add some value, hopefully, to the industry.
Well, thrilled to get to meet you, Chris. And I look forward to meeting you in person, whether it's at Glassbuild in the fall or BEC next year in Vegas. I will make sure to find you. If you're not speaking, which is a possibility, the two of you guys, I will make sure to find you at next year's BEC. I will track you down for sure. So, and if I don't see a Glassbuild before that. So very, very cool. Guys, thank you so much. I've had Neil Chrisman. I've had Chris Incorvaya here, Edge Facade, Pictura Advisory Group, all great people. If you have any adventures on the paint side, on the coating side, these are your guys, folks. So thank you so much, guys, for doing this. And I look forward to seeing you down the line. Thank you.
Thanks, Max.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Okay. Next up on the podcast, Tom Donovan, president of Thompson Innovative Glass. You can find them online at thompsonig.com. And Tom is a guy that I've known for a while, and he's a force in our space. And I'm happy that I can get to know him a little bit better during the podcast. Tom, thanks for so much for doing the podcast.
Wow, a force.
That's a force.
That's a great compliment, Max.
Yeah, it is. And it's because you do things a little differently. And I think it might come from the background that you have. And that'll kind of lead me into the first question. You didn't follow the typical path that a lot of people follow into our industry, where they were maybe in architecture, for instance. So talk a little bit going back, like where you grew up, where you went to school, where you were working, and how you made it into our industry and now at Thompson IG.
I can do that. Yeah, you are correct. As you know, I was born and raised on the east side of Cleveland.
Yep.
My father owned a packaging company, an industrial packaging packaging company. It wasn't in the glass business. Pretty much my entire family worked for the company at some point in time, even including my mother.
Gotcha.
From there, I went to the University of Toledo, majored in accounting and finance. And after college, I took my first job with an aviation services company in Cleveland, Ohio. They primarily supported pre-board screening, checkpoint screening, did some ramp services. And at that position, I got pretty skilled in an ERP system by the name of J.D. Edwards.
Okay.
And that brought me to my next job up in Grand Rapids, Michigan. I worked for, started a job as in Grand Rapids, Michigan for a company involved in design and engineering services, primarily supported the automotive sector.
Right.
Did that for 8 years. And then after that, I was asked to move all the way to the other side of the world. So I lived in Cairns, Australia. Moved to Australia, my family and I. I took a job with a Canadian public oil and gas company.
Right.
100% of their operations were in Papua New Guinea. So Papua New Guinea. I lived in Cairns, Australia. So
Didn't know that. I knew you worked in the oil world. I did not know it was in Australia, though.
Yeah. Well, we were based in Cairns, Australia, right on the Great Barrier Reef.
Yeah. Wow.
My lovely wife and kids, they enjoyed walking three blocks down, hanging out in the Great Barrier Reef.
Yeah.
And our operations were in Papua New Guinea. So we built the first oil refinery. So we did an oil refinery in Papua New Guinea. So,
wow.
And we also explored for oil and gas on there. So when my tenure ended there, I came back to the U.S. looking for a position. And that's in 2006. I was introduced to Dr. Harlan Biker.
Yes.
In the Suntuitive Dynamic Glass Technology. I was hooked then. So really, that was my start of being in the glass business was in 2006.
Gotcha.
So with Pleotent, and soon after that, well, 2012, we acquired Thompson Innovative Glass.
Yes. I'm glad you brought that up because you know, obviously Pleotent and Suntuitive, you know, had a role, and that's how you got into the space. And then you've come into Thompson, and really, you know, that this is where I was kind of getting in the beginning, is you've kind of evolved it from that traditional, you know, fabricator that only did kind of stayed in their lane sort of thing. The one thing you don't do is you don't stay in your lanes. You're trying a little bit of everything. And so, well, you know, quick back up. So you come back, you come back to America, you meet Dr. Biker. Harlan's one of those brilliant types that just is he's beyond all of us, right?
Oh, he pushes all of us. You know, we're always trying to innovate, come up with something new. He's a great force in this company. It's awesome. So
with you now leading the way, and you've taken Thompson into like a whole nother level, because pre Harlan's ownership and you getting involved, Thompson was that traditional, you know, regional fabricator, you know, with IG and Tempered. And you've now, you know, you still have those components, but you do so much more. So was it just like you coming in saying, no, we can't be like everybody else, and we've got to, you know, develop a bunch of new products, which we'll talk about, or, you know, what drove the change?
Wow. That's good. What drove the change? It was a lot of hard work, Max. I tell you, it hasn't been easy. It hasn't been easy, but you know, it was tough. You know, there's, you know, myself coming in this, you know, Tom, you're an oil and gas guy, or you're a automotive guy, or you're a aviation, you know, airline industry. But really getting to back to the fundamentals of a business, what really we saw as what I view as what grew us and as a company was two pronged. One was first class customer service.
Yeah.
You got to be there for the customer, Max. You know, that's everything. Being friendly. You know, my experience in life, I you know, of going through business, people like to work with individuals they like.
Yes.
And so we really pride ourselves on being friendly. The other one is response. You need to reply. You need to follow up. You need to pick up the phone when it's good or bad, you need to properly reply to emails, texts, you know, following up on RFQs, quotes, everything. You know, those are big things. You know, and, you know, the third one is listening to the customer. You need to listen. You need to listen to the customer. And don't be nervous about taking on those challenging projects. Yeah. You know, that's the one thing we're successful at, not saying we don't like saying no to the customer. Like, wow, okay, let's think of how we could do this, or let's talk about it. A lot of our customers find us and come to us because we're willing to take on those challenging projects when we do that. And then also too, the big one is asking customers for feedback.
Right.
So we have a good program that we do customer reviews, and we ask them how we're performing, what we're doing. But at the same time, you need to be able to use that feedback also. Don't ignore it. How could you improve? So really, when we go down to that, you know, it's really that first class customer service.
No doubt. And the lack of fear was big in not, you know, and being able to create things. And so one of the areas was a combination of areas is, you know, bird friendly and security glass, you know, and those are areas that a company, you know, previously to you guys running Thompson, you'd never get into those sort of products. And now when it comes to those products, we'll start with the bird friendly. You have multiple options. You know, you're definitely a true single source when it comes to that. And that's something that sets you apart.
Hey, before I jump into that, Max, if you don't mind, if I back up a little bit and talk about where I think our success has been too.
Yeah, by all means, please.
About first class customer service. But the second biggest one is our ISO certified quality management.
I just saw that. You just re-upped that. You just, you know, got recertified.
Yeah, so we just went through our 3-year recertification. And what we've seen, and I've seen in other businesses, my whole background, is companies that have structured procedures and policies make it effective. That's what grows the bit. You got to have that foundation. In our development of our structured procedures and policies, this started 10 years ago. This didn't happen overnight.
Right.
So, you know, the first phase of this was our business intelligence. So when we got into Thompson just after 2012, we looked at this and we upgraded all the information systems. So we moved to a new ERP system. We added a preventative maintenance system to manage the equipment and the maintenance, and also implemented a statistical process control system. So we were getting real-time data from our processes and using that as a feedback. So once we got through that, the systems point, the business intelligence, we jumped into training. So we went into training. We had long, long sessions putting training videos together. So we have that was the foundation of Thompson University. So we created we started Thompson University. Today we have over 130 different videos for each position in the plant. And that really supports our whole, you know, doing things the right the first time or continuously repeating or the repetitive nature of it. We work two shifts here. So really, is everyone doing the work support and doing the work the same time every time?
Yeah.
So once we got our, then that leads in what you were talking about, our ISO certification. You know, once we had the business intelligence, the systems, the training, that led to the implementation of our QMS, our quality management system. And then in 2001, we had it ISO certified. And then this past January of 3 years, we just had it recertified.
Nice. Congratulations to you on that. That was big news, and it's a good thing. And it's not easy. You know, you just don't sign up for it and get it. You know, I mean, you got to go through the process. And I remember, you know, it's been a few years. I remember, you know, when I got to see some of your training videos, you probably had, you know, 70 or 80, you know, when I saw them, you know, so, but you were way ahead of the curve because that was before my glass class that you had videos out. You had your own. So that's something to be said. You know, props to you and the team there for sure.
Yep. No, thank you. No, we're very proud of our videos. And it helps. It's, you know, our staff, you know, me personally, I'd rather watch a video, listen to books on tape or watch anything versus reading. And it's just convenient. As you know, I always hear you, Max, I'm listening to something while I'm on the treadmill.
There you go. That's it. So now let's talk about the products then, the bird friendly. That one's always been one, and you've heard me talk about this on the podcast, and I have always talked about how it caught me off guard when it first got brought up, but you dove right into it with all those options, and that's something that not everybody wanted to do, and that's put you in a good place as being a real major source for bird friendly glazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we started getting into bird friendly early on in the Suntuita days. So right. We started doing some of the testing with Suntuita before it became, so popular at this time. When you look at bird friendly, it's very safe to predict it's not going away anytime soon.
No.
The growth of the amount of demand for bird friendly solutions. I was at a recent conference, NGA conference, and one of the industry experts was predicting that there will be bird friendly legislation in every U.S. state. This is his opinion, in every U.S. state within the next 20 years.
Wow.
So they're talking about bird friendly being out there. And that's why we aligned ourselves. We know there's different technologies to meet our customers' requests. And we partnered up with several suppliers that, have different bird friendly glass technologies. And, and then we also have our in-house options. So we have our in-house bird friendly options, but we want to have all these bird friendly glass technologies to support our customers' needs.
Yeah. One stop does it all. One stop does it all. And so you've been in the news for a couple things. One was the ISO recertification. One was the Guardian Glass award winning that was announced at BEC. And one was the brand new plant on the west side of Michigan.
Yeah.
Talk about that, the new plant, what's going in there. I assume it's security glass, and we kind of touched on it real brief before, but what's going in the new plant? What's that all look like?
Yeah, it's exciting times on the west side of the state of Michigan. We're moving into a new facility, a new building, and it's really to support the growth of our advanced lamination business sector.
Gotcha.
The goal of this is to create additional capacity. We want to create additional capacity. The new building is only a half mile down from our current facility, down the street. So, and that's the building we've been operating out of for the past 17 years.
Been in
the area. So the primary focus of that advanced lamination business is bullet resistant products. We will also support, incorporating technology, different technologies too. So we have a big effort on looking at different technologies and working on incorporating them into glass products.
Yes.
We're also doing some solar technology, working with some of the solar group. We're switchable glass. So we're a switchable glass. We're working with different technologies and on the switchable side, and then also heated glass.
Yes.
So we've been playing with heated glass for the last 3 or 4 years. We think we finally came up with a product that we feel that may gain some traction in the market. So we're doing some prototypes right now on the heated glass standpoint. So this new facility, we're bringing in new equipment. We're moving some equipment. We're already moved. We hope to be up and running on that new line by September of this coming year.
Right.
Then we'll be, some of the equipment's moving out of our existing facility in Fenton. So we're going to move some of that equipment to the west side of the state, which will free up some room in our Fenton operation to add on some new capabilities. So we're looking forward to that also.
So Fenton stays doing what it's doing, and this new advanced laminated facility will just go sophisticated and be led by BR Glass, and then everything else that you come up with. Okay,
exactly.
Good. It's exciting stuff going on there in the world of Thompson IG. I've got Tom Donovan, president of Thompson Innovative Glass. See them online, thompsonig.com. Follow them on LinkedIn as well. And so always halfway through the podcast, I always have a fun question. And this one, I can't wait because you and I were supposed to have a pod a while back. We had to postpone. And so I've been waiting for this answer. You grew up in the Cleveland area, East Side. Huge Cleveland Brown fan, biggest one I know. And so I'm really curious on your top three all-time Cleveland Browns. And as I wrote you in the note, you can't say Jim Brown because that's too easy. So who are the top three Cleveland Browns in Tom Donovan's world?
It's funny, Max. I'm actually going to the Hall of Fame with my brother this coming weekend. First time I've ever
No way.
Football Hall of Fame, yes. I know your brother did some glass on there.
Yes, he did. So he did.
I'll be looking for his logos on the glass.
Yep.
But first time going there, and the reason I'm going there because they have a special it runs for I think a month, 45 days. It's the history of the Browns.
So nice.
They have display of the history of the Browns. So, I promise. Yeah. Reading the history, it may change my number three pick, but it's definitely not going to change my one and two.
Okay.
So, starting off, my number one would absolutely be Bernie Kosar.
Gotcha. Yep.
You got to appreciate a player that grew up in the Cleveland area, grew up a Browns fan, always been a Browns fan, wanted to play for the Browns. You don't see many of those often. When Belichick let him go, that would have been in 1993, fired. So Belichick was the coach, fired him, canned him, let him go, just cut him. Then he got picked up by Dallas. But when they did that, Max, I created a shrine. I had a Bernie Kosar shrine in my office, and friends of mine had connections to the local news, and they came in and they actually did a story. They came in and interviewed me when Kosar got let go, but
I don't know if you've seen this, and I didn't watch it close enough, but in the new Apple series Dynasty about the New England Patriots, it's 10 episodes, and there's an episode on Belichick and his past at Cleveland and when he made the call to cut Kosar the protests in town and people marching and people crying. Oh my gosh, you were probably in there and I wasn't paying close enough attention.
I'll have to pull it out one day. I know it's on a VHS tape in my basement somewhere. Taping off the local. I left the VCR back in the days, and have my shrine in the office. And
I probably had
more hair, not as much gray then, a little thinner. But
I'll have to figure out which episode that was and go back to it. But it's in there. There's a whole section in one of the episodes about Belichick and cutting Bernie Kosar, kind of how it made him as a coach. All right, number two. Who's your number two?
Keep in mind, I'm old Browns, right? So I'm before the move in 96. Number two would be Hanford Dixon, cornerback Hanford Dixon.
Absolutely. Great pick. Great pick.
I love Hanford. He's known for, he's the one that's credited for naming the dog pound.
Yep. Yep.
So, have him barking and all that, it's one of those things I got to stick with. And this number three one, I go back and forth just because of his after leaving the Browns, but it's got to be Ozzie Newsome, tight end Ozzie Newsome.
Yeah.
Another one that was with the Browns. Since Browns' entire career, he had the single game receiving yards record up until good old Josh Gordon beat it. And we all know we don't need to get into that.
No.
So Josh should stay. And then Cooper.
Amari Cooper passed this past year.
But Ozzie, I just remember those days. Everyone saying they wanted to be Ozzie, and what a cool name. There's Ozzie. My distaste was his loyalty to the Ravens after that. It's hard, but.
I don't know how I would have reacted. I mean, if I grew up in Pittsburgh and, as a Steeler fan, I don't know, as a Brown fan, I feel bad for all of you guys because it was just such a brutal thing having the franchise ripped out of your hands, but at least you got it back and at least you got to keep the name too. that's the big thing is keeping the name. I think Baltimore should have got, if they did it, they should have at least got the Colts back, but regardless, I'm glad you got the name back, and it seems like the team's headed in the right direction this year. Tough division, but headed in the right direction.
I want to come back and play for them. It's hard to, and I'm not going to get into your Steelers loyalty. We don't need to get into that.
No, I've lived in Detroit longer, so I've become more of a Lions fan. So I do like my underdog Lions for sure. I got Tom Donovan, president at Thompson Innovative Glass. He's a busy man, and I've held him up a ton, but I got a few more questions. One thing I really admire about you, and when I say that you're a force as well, is because the way you've thrown yourself in on the technical side of things. You haven't been afraid to attend the conferences. You haven't been afraid to bring up issues that you see. A lot of times people come to the conferences and, you know, they sit back and listen. And if they don't like something, they keep it to themselves and they, you know, then, you know, talk to other people about it. They don't, you know, bring it to the forefront. And you are active in it. You're interested in it. You're taking a role. I think that's huge. How was it like it though for you first going in there and first going to a conference and settling into it? Were you hesitant? You know, what was the feeling? And then how did you get more comfortable as you went along?
Yeah, well, first of all, you're right. You know, Max, I'm all in on this. I tell you, I'm all in on these technical conferences. You know, the first one I attended was in July 22. Mm-hmm. And that's where my main focus of going there was to learn more about school security, right. The school security glazing efforts, and then that new ASTM standard F3561, learn about that. So that was my main focus. So going to Chicago, it was close to, you know, Michigan. So right. Going down there and visiting that. So I go there and I visit that, and I learned a ton about school security and active shooter and going through all the new ASTM standard. But it was everything else that opened my eyes. All the other topics that was covered, they were so relevant and important to Thompson. It blew me away. And, you know, since that attending, I haven't missed a conference since. Right. I participate in some of the subcommittees. I'm on several of those. And I do. I question everyone in our industry. If anyone ever questions what the NGA does for our industry, they need to go to one of these technical conferences. It's unbelievable. There's a lot of coverage. And like in any of the NGA conferences, the information, but it's just the networking, getting there, the networking, you know, learning a lot from these technical individuals that support different companies. Yeah, it's tremendous. And like I said, I'm all in on this and I'm going to continue going to this.
Love it. Love it. Love it. So what are some of the key areas you think, you know, now that you're attending these things and you're active and have been, you know, what are some of the things that we need to keep paying attention to in our industry? I know one of them is attracting people, but that's everybody has that issue. What else do we need to focus on as an industry to get better at?
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, when we talk about EPDs, you know, all the EPDs, the environmental issues and all that, there was a topic that came up at the last technical conference in Charleston. They had in glass from Europe mm-hmm. talking about what they're doing with end-of-life building glass. So, you know, it was, eye-opening, you know, about the amount of end-of-life building glass that gets recycled. I thought if I recall, it was like 5% of the glass coming off the buildings gets recycled in right. Europe. But all the efforts on doing that, I would, you know, it's not easy. Believe me, it's not easy. I love watching those old casinos in Vegas get blown up, but yep. you're not going to get that, you know, seeing those. But I would say that'd be one area, you know, looking at that. You know, another one, I don't know if it is possible, but I look at our industry on the commercial side. We're primarily in the commercial side versus the residential, but you know, if there was a way to come up with more standard sizes, quantity of sizes, it's challenging throughout the whole supply chain. I do feel that everyone has, you know, whether it's you go to all the different sizes of glass and quantities and being able to track it, measuring it, it would all the way through the whole supply chain from, you know, measuring, you know, all the way through, you know, putting the units together, the metal side, the installation, the glass fab, you know, it's difficult. The time and effort it takes is tracking individual load units by opening and doing all that. I would say, you know, like I said, that is it possible? I don't know, but it's one of the areas that I just feel the whole industry could be run more efficient.
Yeah, and it would be nice at least to get a little bit further to that. But that's definitely a challenge. The SKUs, the amount of SKUs are insane in a lot of products that are just so close too, you know, that there's not that big of a leap. Yeah, you know, and you're only talking a little bit of percentage numbers. And that's got to be challenging for you because you have to inventory a lot of that stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm with you on the EPDs and the HPDs. I had a conversation 2 weeks ago, and I was asked about how that's coming in our industry. And I said, for a lot of people, they don't even know what it is, and they're hoping somebody else will take care of it. And that's kind of how I see that. So that's how we're going. All right, last one for Tom Donovan, President Thompson Innovative Glass. Great company, has a bunch of stuff going on. And I assume you've got an excitement for the rest of this year and into next year. How's your feeling? How's your scope going for our economy and your business particularly?
You know, like I said, we're just going to stick to the basics. Like I pointed out earlier, really a lot of that is our, focus on that customer service, that satisfaction. And then, looking at improving on our QMS and running more efficient. You know, I mean, there's no doubt our company, we're going to continue the focus on innovation. That's what we are. You know, we're innovation. We're always looking for new glass products. It's guaranteed that we're going to develop some new glass products, some new materials this year, some new processes. And that's all in an effort to improve our partners, our customers' profitability. While we're doing all that on the innovation side and looking to expand into the technology side, we're not going to lose focus on our quality policy. Mm-hmm. When I talk about our QMS, our quality policy, a lot of times we call it our high five here at Thompson. Where we focus on, everything about customer satisfaction, vendor relations, awareness, ownership, and the big one, continued improvement. Continuous improvement. That's what we strive and strive on, getting better and better every day. So yeah, that's what you can expect out of Thompson in this year and beyond. So
it's a good call. That's a good call. And continuous improvement, something that people sometimes gloss right on over too. I mean, they get to a point where they're comfortable. You know, and so I guess for you, you can't get to a point where you're comfortable because you got a brand new plant to open and stock and move. There's no sitting back for you or Jeremy or Lauren or the rest of the team. I mean, you got a good team around you, which makes it a little easier too.
And you point out it's a new plant. So, it's being laid out. We're doing the infrastructure. And so there's no excuses either, right?
I mean, exactly.
You can only point the finger at yourself if it's not set up properly and running it. But, our CTO, Mike Brookhouse, had all the confidence in the world in him. So,
yep, another good guy. Well, very, very cool. I appreciate you taking the time. Thompson IG, Thompson Innovative Glasses, on a roll, from bird friendly to security to schools and so on. And Tom Donovan leading the way. Plus, he I'm so happy you picked Hanford Dixon. That proved how good of a fan you are, because he is a legendary Brown. So you came through for me on that one. This was real good stuff. Thank you so much for doing the podcast.
I thank you for that. And I can't thank you for everything you do for our industry. You're awesome. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I try. I get to work with people like you, around the day, and it makes it good. So no, I'm honored by that, but I love seeing what you're doing, and I'm excited for Thompson's future and the way it supports our industry. And so thank you very much for that. And
it's been an honor and a privilege. Thank you, Max.
Coming to the shows and everything. So Tom Donovan, President Thompson Innovative Glass, Thompson IG, good company. And again, thank you very much, sir. Thanks.
Thank you, Max.
Okay. That wraps things up for this month's From the Fabricator podcast. A lot of fun. Some real interesting things. Learned a lot from Neil and Chris and Tom. That was really, eye-opening in some levels. Again, this podcast brought to you by MyGlassClass.com from the National Glass Association. Check that out, MyGlassClass.com. 24/7, 365 training. You need the training for your folks, train to retain, train to, get ahead of the rest of the industry. Check it out at myglassclass.com. As always, I end each one talking about some TV, and this month's recommendation is The Capture. It is on Peacock. I know some people are watching it on Apple, but I'm watching it on Peacock. Thanks to Ben Beeler for the recommendation. Pretty good show. I'm not done with it yet, but it's got my attention. It's got me hooked. Interesting show from the BBC. Again, I'm watching it on Peacock. You may be able also to find it on Apple. It is called The Capture. Gets you really thinking about video, deep fakes, and so on. So some good stuff there TV-wise, and it's been a good treadmill show. And that's, that's what I care about. That does it for me for this month. I thank everybody for listening, watching, supporting. It means a lot. I really do appreciate it. And I look forward to seeing everybody again in this space next month. Thank you very much and see you then.
Oh, the music is stopped.